You want kicking things out of orbit?
Oh my gosh!
I'm gonna just knock it sideways.
One of the greatest fighters.
John Jones beat every champion. Pretty much now.
Khabib gets his hands on McGregor, it's gonna be a bad night.
Let's get into it.
And welcome back to another episode of This Week in MMA. As always, one half of your hosting duo, Matt. I open the picks and predictions with that, but you can always find me on Twitter and Instagram at CraigAllenFNP. With me to my left, to your right, at Matt Allen FNP. And Matt, if this is the first time somebody's tuning into This Week in MMA, well, it's a little bit of a different look. We're going to be kind of going at this at a different angle, because what we did with no really big shows coming up this week, you don't have Bellator, PFL, UFC, you've got one championship in some capacity, but there aren't some of the bigger organizations. I guess I should say Combate does have an event coming up, but other than that, not a whole lot to look forward to. However, we do have the return of the Ultimate Fighter coming up very shortly. So we're going to throw it on over to a look at some of the previous episodes, previous seasons of the Ultimate Fighter. And we also threw it out there in the YouTube community tab, over on Instagram, as well as on Twitter. We wanted to hear from you. It's the FNP This Week in MMA Q&A. A lot of great questions thrown out there so far. So we're talking prospects, some of the other organizations that are out there. We've got a lot to talk about in This Week in MMA. Matt, this is one of my favorite shows to do on the channel.
It's a really fun one to do. And normally with This Week in MMA, we are looking ahead to the PFLs, the Bellators, the ONE Championships, the KSWs. But with this, it gives us a great chance to, like you said, answer some fan questions, look back at some of the great seasons of The Ultimate Fighter. Because here's the thing. I know a lot of people might have gotten off The Ultimate Fighter at different stages or different seasons. But just going through and looking back, like, there were some really good seasons upon hindsight and reviewing. So I'm really excited to go through and kind of figure out what is the best Ultimate Fighter season.
Well, I can't wait for it. So let's throw it on over. And Matt, real excited to talk about it. This is the Ultimate Fighter Bracket Challenge. Let's get into it. And Matt, this is the Ultimate Fighter Bracket Challenge. I can't wait for it, because what we have for you is a March Madness bracket. Well, divided by eight. We have eight seeds out of the 28 previous seasons. And listen, I thought about it. We could go 16, but that's just too many. It would take forever. So we're going to go with our picks for the eight. Let us know down below in the comments section. And maybe we missed some. And really, I'm going to throw it out there. You might be disappointed already with some of the honorable mentions. Season 13 did not make the cut. Season 3 did not make the cut. Season 22, unfortunately, did not make the cut. And if I had it my way, there's a few others in there. But Matt, season 13, you had Tony Ferguson. It was a very, very memorable season.
It was, but kind of for all the wrong reasons. Because here's the thing. Tony Ferguson was the most memorable part of the season. And here's the thing that I will throw out there. I hate it when they would build up an Ultimate Fighter season just so the coaches wouldn't fight at the end. And that was the big issue. Because Brock Lesnar versus Junior Santos, sign me up. That's a phenomenal fight. But we never ended up getting that matchup at the end of the season. So I just feel like it's sort of left a sour taste throughout.
And it was unfortunate. I mean, the diverticulitis to the adopted Canadian being Brock Lesnar there. So we lost that main event, if you will. Season 3, really neat one there. I mean, Bisping, one of the kind of up-and-comers there. You had Matt Hamill, too. Like, a lot of memorable
Kendall
guys.
Kendall Grove.
And Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz at the top. But again, it was a little played out, but there was a lot of drama in that season.
That was a really weird season. Now, the great thing that season has going for it is it does have one of those all-timers on it. You know, like, in the last Hall of Fame induction ceremony for the NBA, it was three of the best players ever. Some years, not always great. Some years, great. And at least with season 3 of The Ultimate Fighter, there is that one kind of Hall of Fame member on there with Michael Bisping. Some of the other names might have fizzled out a little bit too soon on that season, but just Bisping, I feel like, does make that season at least deserve an honorable mention.
And then season 22, how could we not forget in the finale, Ryan Hall, Artem Lobov, your two coaches, Uri Faber, and the man himself, Conor McGregor. This little snake in the grass was hanging around out around there, and TJ Dillashaw, who we'll be talking about later on. But season 22, I mean, Marcin Rocek, who can I forget? There's so many great fighters in that season.
Remember when David Tamer told Cody Garbrandt to change his underwears? Because that was a real thing that happened that season. Just a weird season, because it really felt like it was Team Artem Lobov, Team Conor McGregor, but you knew everything he was doing was for Artem Lobov, versus Team Alpha Male. And yes, some of those Team Alpha Male fighters were half decent, but it was weird because it felt like a lot of the Team Alpha Male fighters up until that point, they were already kind of in the UFC. So the fighters they were picking from, like Garbrandt was already in the UFC, Dillashaw already in the UFC at that point. So maybe it wasn't wasn't the strongest breed of fighters, but it was an interesting idea for the season because they did have Conor McGregor, big star, and Uriah Faber, big star. But again, that season does suffer because at the end, listen, Conor McGregor versus Uriah Faber in like 2015, you can sign me up for that all the way. Like, that at 145 is a very fun fight. But at that point, listen, Faber had lost a few. It wasn't really the California kid at that point. McGregor was just starting to go on his crazy run. So I understand why they didn't put the fighters together, but that is one of those kind of main events that got away when you look at the coaches who never ended up fighting at the end.
All right, Max, that leaves us with, well, really, if you take 28 less the 3, we got 25, and there are some notable omissions, but we have a top 8 for you. So let's throw it on over to our Ultimate Fighter Bracket Challenge. Matt, and just like that, the Ultimate Fighter Bracket Challenge begins. And Matt, the reason why I wanted to do this is because, again, your next season, Volkanovski Ortega coming up shortly, you have some really interesting fighters. And it's kind of a shame because if they wanted to bring the season back without Dana White's Contender Series having ever happened, there'd be a lot of talent. And that's exactly what you get out of the seasons that we have coming up here. So if we start down through the bracket, it was totally random. We have the Ultimate Fighter Brazil Season 3. We have Season 10, very memorable. Season 24 against Season 15. Season 1 against 5, ooh, two early ones duking it out. We also have Season 14 taking on Season 20. And if we start up at the top, Matt, I mean, Brazil Season 3 taking on Season 10. I know that both of these near and dear to a lot of MMA fans' hearts. Now, maybe you don't speak Portuguese, but you can watch with the subtitles. The Ultimate Fighter Season 3 Brazil is one that I hold really near and dear to my heart. And it's based on the two winners that we got. I mean, Warley Alves, a guy who, have we said the nicest things about him recently? Maybe not. Did he beat Colby Covington? Hell yeah, he did. Did he beat Munir Lazez recently? You're right, he did. But for Warley Alves, a huge win on the Ultimate Fighter. And then if you consider, too, the other winner on the season, holy smokes. I mean, is the guy making waves in the UFC anymore? No. Could he win the PFLs next season? Maybe. It's Shoeface Antonio Carlos Jr. who won it at heavyweight. Warley Alves at middleweight. Your two coaches that year, Vanderlei Silva, Chael Sonnen, and some great sound bites from that year.
I feel like I remember this season most because of the memes. Because let's be honest, it wouldn't be Halloween on MMA Twitter without the Halloween MMA Twitter starter pack, which is a pair of black flip-flops, a green shirt, and just the crate saying, "I can't let you get close to me, Vanderlei Silva." Really, that 50-second clip is as good of content as the Ultimate Fighter has ever really come up with. "I can't let you get close to me, Vanderlei Silva." A quote for the ages. And that was really the first time where it felt like the winners did make waves in the UFC up until a certain point. Like, yes, Yair Rodriguez has come from the first season of the Brazil kind of expansion through the Ultimate Fighter, but it did feel like
Latin America.
It did feel like on Tough Brazil 3 that at least Warley Alves and Shoeface, they did have long tenures in the UFC. And yes, we're starting to see now them fall off maybe a little bit. But listen, they were around for a while. Like, Warley Alves had all those crazy fights. You don't go from beating Colby Covington and then having the whole basic career arc of Colby Covington without being around the UFC for a very long time. So for Shoeface and Warley Alves both, yes, maybe neither one of them reached the lofty heights that, you know, Mike Goldberg thought that... I can't even think of the joke that I was going to make, but they were solid UFC fighters who did stay around for a while.
Yeah, I mean, and if I can really kind of ride on your coattails there, Felipe Nover.
Thank
you,
goodness.
That's who you're going for. Felipe Nover. Really saving lives out there these days. So you've got Season 3 of Brazilian version of the Ultimate Fighter, and comparing that or going up against Season 10 heavyweights, Matt, that was a season that you'll see in UFC promos till the end of time promoted because all the fighters are out on the floor, and then boom, in steps Kimbo Slice. Now, did Kimbo win the season? No, but it didn't matter. At the end, you had Roy Nelson taking on everybody's favorite comedian, and I'm not talking about Adam Hunter. It's actually Brendan Schaub. That was a great finale, but overall, some really, really notable names from that season.
It was a really weird season because that felt like the Ultimate Fighter was officially starting to get fatigue, if you will, by the 10th season. So the UFC was like, okay, how can we make this interesting again? Let's just take Kimbo Slice, who really, at the time, was the largest name of Kimbo in combat sports. And yes, backyard fighting might not be the same kind of combat sports you think of when you think about combat sports in 2021. But at the time, like, Kimbo Slice was a big deal. He was the Jake Paul of his era, kind of, where it was, yes, it might not be fighting in the traditional sense, sense, but it's fighting that is getting a lot of eyeballs brought over to it. And I remember hearing Brendan Schaub say this. When they announced another fighter, this kind of mystery fighter, if you will, was going to join Season 10, a lot of people thought it was Fedor Emelianenko. Like, that was a real kind of tease that people thought it was going to be. The greatest fighter ever. And he was the greatest fighter ever in 2009, 2010, when that season came out. He was going to be on that season, or at least people thought. And then Kimbo Slice walked through those doors. And listen, for better or for worse, maybe his MMA career wasn't championship worthy, but he had a memorable one. Like, he beat Houston Alexander. I didn't beat Houston Alexander. Now, yes, the fight was weird, and maybe it was rigged. And listen, he had a lot of other weird, potentially rigged fights later on in the future.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. But if Seth Petruzzelli says that he was offered money to not take Kimbo Slice down, I have to take him at his word. Season 10, at the worst, is one of the most memorable seasons for those reasons, though. Listen, Brendan Schaub's not even in the MMA world right now, and still a lot of people inside of MMA know who he is. Now, yes, he might still be kind of in the MMA world as kind of an entertainer who has MMA associated with their act, but it's not like Brendan Schaub's watching the fight night events, I don't think. Like, I don't think he's really got his ear to the MMA beat nowadays, but like I said, when you think about names like Roy Nelson, even the other names on there, Justin Wren, like Justin Wren's name doesn't get brought up because of MMA. Justin Wren's out there saving lives all over the world, okay?
Well, if you have a look at it, I mean, two guys that made major impacts with other organizations, Justin Wren with Bellator,
true,
and then Matt Mitrione also with Bellator. Now, a guy that really has a hard time keeping his mouth guard in his mouth securely, but Mitrione, you've got Wren, you've got Brendan Schaub, James McSweeney, the stand-up artist, Kimbo Slice, there's so many names from that season. Now, is everybody talking about Daryl Shuvner or Wes Shivers? Maybe not, but it was still a really memorable season.
And
in
here's
the end,
here's the other crazy thing too. Roy Nelson fought Andrei Arlovsky before it was even on the Ultimate Seasons or the Ultimate Fighter Season 10. So that tells you just how good some of those fighters were before they were even brought on. Because here's the thing, you had kind of referenced it with them doing Season 29 and Dana White Contender Series. There's a lot of prospects getting fights right now, so you just kind of wonder what the talent pool is that they're going to be able to choose from for Season 29. Back then, there was a lot less regional fighters. There wasn't two Tuesday Contender Series, so they were really able to handpick a lot of the best prospects all around North America. So I just feel like when we do look back at some of the earlier seasons of The Ultimate Fighter, it really was an opportunity for a lot of those fighters when you didn't really see a lot of those other opportunities through the Bellators, through the LFAs, just other organizations like that weren't out there and they weren't at the forefront. So the UFC really did have the opportunity to pick for a much higher level of competition in these earlier seasons.
Back in the IFL days. Now, Matt, when we compare these two, Season 10, Season 3, the Brazilian Ultimate Fighter, I mean, Season 10 had such a big impact on the landscape. I'd have to think 10 goes on here.
I mean, James McSweeney went on to fight Tai Tuivasa, so that's pretty cool. But no, I agree. I think 10, it just had the more memorable characters along with the more memorable fighters. And I do think that's important because when we're ranking these seasons, I don't think we're just going off the roster 100%. Like, you have to go with who were the memorable fighters from that season. What were some of the big storylines? I do feel like 10 delivered in both of those categories.
So if we move on down a slot, you get Season 24 and Season 15. And for Season 24, you're ushering in a complete new era. Wow, what a season that was.
I watched every episode of this season, and it was the last season I ever watched, but it was kind of cool. They took all these regional champions from all over North America, even South America, just all over, and they were like, hey, do you want the opportunity to fight Demetrius Johnson? And that's what they gave you the opportunity to do. It was very kind of Matt Serra-esque when he later on went on to fight GSP. That was his reward, if you will, for winning the Ultimate Fighter. Tim Elliott's reward for winning his season of the Ultimate Fighter was a fight against Demetrius Johnson. That's a really cool reward. Like, normally the fighter gets, what, like $10,000 and, like, three fights on the prelims? But Tim Elliott, he got his fight, he's got his career really off running and starting out of the gate. And the cool thing was, for Elliott, that was his second run in the UFC. There were some fighters on that season who you did have the opportunity to see them before they were on the Ultimate Fighter. And then you get the chance to see guys like Pantoja, Kai Kara-France, Tim Elliott. Like, fighters still relevant nowadays. That's how important this season was.
I mean, think about it in this context. Brandon Moreno lost his first fight by submission to Alessandro Pantoja. Brandon Moreno's fighting for the title again coming up in the next month. You also had, like you said, Kai Kara-France. You had big names like Eric Shelton, who we've seen here and there, Adam Antolin, Ronaldo Candido, Matt Schnell, who again is still in the UFC. And it leads all the way up to Ogi Kubo against Elliott. Wow. I mean, really, really big names. And ultimately, at the end, the final prize is, well, first of all, you get to have two really good champs in Henry Cejudo. You also have Joseph Benavidez involved in the season, but the winner gets the opportunity at the belt. I mean, this is something we never seen before.
No, exactly. And it was so new and so fresh at the time. And really, you gotta remember, at the time, DJ was on, what, his 47th title defense? Like, he had run out of fighters to fight at the time. So the fact that they did go out, they did get regional champions who never thought in a million years they'd have the opportunity to fight Demetrius Johnson. That's the opportunity that they were given. And again, those are memorable fighters who are still in the UFC nowadays. Now, I know I kind of mentioned sort of our criteria and, you know, the coaches have to... They have a role somewhat. The coaches for the season were terrible. I remember Joseph Benavidez and Henry Cejudo's back and forth. It was not all that exciting. Because here's the thing. Joseph Benavidez, he's a pretty good guy. Like, doesn't really have... He's not in the headlines all that often. Like, him and Megan O'Leary are cool. They just kind of do their own thing. They're not really out there kind of personalities. And for Henry Cejudo, this was before he kind of made the king of cringe, if you will. So it was just like, I have an Olympic gold medal and DJ beat me. But, like, I'm still pretty good. It's just the coaches themselves didn't really add a lot to the product. But I do feel like the athletes themselves really pushed it over the edge.
Season 24, definitely a lot of fun. Now, compare that to season 15. I saw a lot of people out there on Reddit, on Twitter. This seemed to be one of the marquee seasons. It was live. You had a couple of really big names up at the top. Cruz and Faber. And then you look at the names on this season. Joe Proctor, Chris Tickle, Darren Cruikshank, James Vick, Chiesa. And it goes on and on. Justin Lawrence was a top pick.
Miles
Sam Cecilia,
Jury.
Miles Jury, Vince Paichel, Ally Quinta, Andy Ogle. A lot of names that people recognize. And ultimately, in the end, your finale is Chiesa and Ally Quinta. Two guys that, if you look at it for Ally Quinta, is he still ranked? Did the UFC rankings make a lot more sense than the Bellator rankings these days? I would think they actually do.
Actually, yeah.
But Chiesa, he's a desk guy now as far as the analysis is concerned. He's a top 10 ranked welterweight. This season was special due to the fact that it was live, but also these participants kind of off the charts.
Oh, 100%. This is a very saturated season when it comes to talent. Because like some of the names you brought up. This season, really, this is like the 2017 Masterclass season. Because when you look at where all these fighters were around that time, like James Vick versus Ally Quinta could have been a main event in the UFC. Michael Chiesa versus James Vick or Ally Quinta. Like, all those fighters at one point did kind of become main event talents all at the same time. That's a really unique thing. Because normally when you look at some of these seasons, like 13 get an honorable mention because of Tony Ferguson. There's only one memorable name on that season. But we talk about Ally Quinta, Michael Chiesa, Sam Cecilia, Miles Jury. Like, there's just so many fighters on that season who went on to have really memorable UFC careers. And yes, maybe Sam Cecilia is not at the forefront of a lot of people's MMA knowledge, if you will, but like, he went on to have a good UFC career and now fights in Bellator. Like, he was a guy who was around for a long time, and I do feel like that matters, because if you look at a lot of the seasons, it was like, okay, you're on the season Ultimate Fighter, you didn't win, you might have fought on that like one kind of year-end show, if you will, and then that's it for a lot of the fighters. So when you do look at this live season, the fact that yes, it was the first and only live season, and the fact that there were so many memorable not only champs but just fighters on there, it is a really good season. And I'm kind of surprised they never went back to that format of doing the live episodes. I understand it's tough with the timetables and depending on fighters' recoveries and whatnot, but still, it was a really cool idea at the time that I'm surprised we haven't seen them replicate since.
And Cruz and Faber leading the charge, huge names there, so stick around and we'll kind of give you an overview of who we're picking there. If we move down though, season one against season five, now we're really starting to get back a bit. And the UFC will still promote this, and they'll do this till the cows come home, and so will we to an extent. Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture's coaches, you had middleweight and light heavyweights. Obviously, Diego Sanchez, your middleweight winner. Forrest Griffin, your light heavyweight winner. You look at the runners-up. Ken Flo and Stefan Bonner, guys that carved out huge careers in their own right. And the Ultimate Fighter one, obviously it's a stepping stone. Again, the UFC in their 25th anniversary made a huge deal about promoting this season. You compare that to season five, the return of Jens Pulver, you had BJ Penn, the other coach, and then you look at the fighters at the end, Nate Diaz and Big Manny. Wow. Huge names there too.
Just a crazy season. Like season five of The Ultimate Fighter was, you know, when you just really like a show, like Game of Thrones by season four, you're like, wow, they've kind of figured out the formula. The Ultimate Fighter season five, by that point, they figured out the formula. We just had to have big names in there against really any level of rival, because that's the good thing about The Ultimate Fighter. Even though BJ Penn was fighting Jens Pulver, and BJ Penn was definitely the A side, even back then was by far the A side, it still allowed Jens Pulver to kind of be built up as an opponent. And yes, Jens Pulver was sort of kind of even a legend at that point. And listen, we don't have to break down the whole career of Jens Pulver right now, but It's weird. He loses to Joe Lozon and is returned to the UFC, then goes on to coach Joe Lozon on season 5 of The Ultimate Fighter.
And then Joe doesn't win the season.
Just really weird situation around the whole relationship between kind of the fighters and the coaches during this season. But Nate Diaz winning. Nate Diaz had so many memorable moments on this show.
Kid's a mental fighter.
Kid's a mental fighter. And listen, back then on Spike TV, like, anything went for The Ultimate Fighter season 5, so you could kind of get away with anything. But that was Nate Diaz, like, at his best. Like, that was Stockton MF for, like, we're gonna be talking a lot of smack. It was just so much fun because BJ Penn at that time, he was the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world. Like, that'd be like if, I guess, John Jones at the peak of his fame was like, sure, I'll coach The Ultimate Fighter. Like, you didn't really get fighters in their primes being like, yeah, I'll go out of my way to do reality TV and not be a fighter at that point. But the fact that BJ Penn, kind of at the peak of his powers, was going out of his way to do The Ultimate Fighter was really cool. And again, the fact that I'd say one of the top five names ever in MMA came from it, Nate Diaz. Like, Nate Diaz is that kind of a star globally that I don't know how we couldn't mention The Ultimate Fighter season 5.
So season 5, you had some big names. Obviously, Nate Diaz, Rob Emerson, Gray Maynard, Manny, Matt Wyman, Joe Lozon, Cole Miller, like a lot of really big names, especially Cole Miller to skinny white guys like ourselves. I mean, Cole Miller, shout.
Well, and since I brought up the memes from Brazil season 3, remember when Andy Huang was like, listen, I'll die in that cage. And then BJ Penn had that great, like, and then he's crying there after the fight, like, wah, wah. Just shout out to BJ Penn. I hope you're doing well because at one point you were.
So we compare that to season 1, and I mean season 1 of The Ultimate Fighter. Mike Swick takes on Stephen Bonner, Forrest Griffin, Sam Hoger, Josh Koscheck, Diego Sanchez, Ken Flo taking on Chris Lieben. A, it's insane that fight even happened, but B, I mean, this really led the charge, and this is one of my favorite seasons to go back and watch because you consider all of the names. Even add to that, I mean, just some, you know, names that we don't hear about as much, but I mean, Nate Quarry was on that season too. Big, big names.
Season 1 of The Ultimate Fighter is really cool. And I think of season 1 kind of like how I think of Larry Bird versus Magic Johnson in the finals for the NBA. Because, hear me out, in the 1970s, no one cared about basketball. Like, yeah, Bill Russell was cool. But, like, as a market, the NBA didn't really have a big market yet. But Larry Bird and Magic Johnson facing off against each other in the finals. You have your two biggest stars playing against each other in the biggest kind of tournament, if you will. It made the NBA just explode in popularity. And really, the season 1 for The Ultimate Fighter was the exact same thing. Like, everything before that I look at is kind of like the 1970s for basketball. Like, this was really, okay, you have regular people at their homes able to watch MMA. And yes, they might not go on to be MMA fans and watch every UFC event, but you know what to convince those people to do? Go to MMA gyms, or at least get interested in the sport a little bit more. And then you see the explosion that even nowadays MMA is kind of paying off of. Remember when Rory McDonald was the first, like, MMA fighter who it was like, hey, this guy's not just like a kickboxer who now fights MMA. Like, he's an MMA fighter. He was only that MMA fighter because of The Ultimate Fighter Season 1. There would be no GSPs. There would be no fighters nowadays who are able to incorporate their wrestling with their jiu-jitsu, with their boxing, as well as you can see fighters do today. And fighters my age, Craig's age, in their early to mid-20s, like, we were kind of inspired by this first season of The Ultimate Fighter. Like, we were sneaking away trying to watch this because our parents didn't want us to watch MMA on TV. And these are the types of really experiences that made us grow up to become the MMA fans that we are today. So I think The Ultimate Fighter Season 1, outside of just the names, the mass amount of influence it not only had on people like us, but just as over the sport in general, I don't know how we could mention The Ultimate Fighter Season 1.
And I want to say it was UFC Undisputed, if I'm going back, that they had videos, they had certain UFC fights, and you could go on and click them. And I remember sitting in my room on my PS3 with my 27-inch old-style cathode ray TV, and I'd watch that fight between Griffin and Bonner, and I'd watch it and watch it and watch it and watch it, and I want to watch MMA more. And now, we could argue video games, was that a better game than EA Sports MMA? And at the time, we had EA Sports MMA.
We did.
Going back, that was probably the better game. Like, just
I
straight
just
up gameplay.
Three with Anderson Silva on the front, I stand to this day as the best game. But that's
Skill
a
Stick, you
for
got Fedor,
day.
You had, who was it? Nick Diaz was in that game. I love that one. But overall, nice. Just going back and watching that video over and over made me a bigger fan at the time. I mean, season 1, it's got to go on over season 5. But season 5 is a great one. Like I said, to start this off, honorable mention season 3. You had Bisping, you had Grove, so on and so forth. But season 1, moving on. That leaves us with season 14, going up against season 20. Now, Matt, we talked about it. Honorable mention was season 22. You had McGregor, you had Faber. But season 20, The Ultimate Fighter, a champion will be crowned. Coaches Gilbert Melendez, Anthony Pettis fighting it out for the lightweight strap. And spoiler alert, Pettis keeps the belt. But if you look at it, women's strawweight is introduced. You have in the finals, Rose Namajunas, Carla Esparza. Probably your next title fight at strawweight, but this was a really, really good season back in 2014.
It really was. It's really wild looking back in hindsight, too, of what the main event was for that strawweight title. Because you had said, Rose Namajunas fought Carla Esparza for the UFC strawweight title. Now in 2021, you're like, wait, is that coming up in a few months? No, that happened all the way back in 2014, before like Joanna Jędrzejczyk was even a thought in UFC fans' minds. Like, this season was just so groundbreaking for that reason. Not only did it bring in the inaugural champ and the division of 115, the women's strawweight division, but also like that division to this day is the best women's division. I'll argue that with anybody. Like, Bantamweight has had a lot more time to kind of progress and people have really figured out where they belong in the division, but a lot of those fighters in Bantamweight are still the same fighters who were in the rankings when the rankings first came out. In strawweight, we've seen this massive rotation in talent, really year after year, you have new prospects being inserted into this division, and this division to this day, like, this is really how to start a division done right. We're gonna do the Ultimate Fighter, we're gonna get this top 16 fighters, like, the actual top 16 fighters, and the winner's the champ, and at the end, great, they're just the champion. Now, yes, that champ might not have enough pull after the season to headline a pay-per-view, but they're a great co-main event to a pay-per-view, or they're a great third title fight on a pay-per-view, and the fact that Carla Esparza and Rose Namajunas are now probably fighting again for the title that they originally fought over to start this division, just wild to see how full circle this division's come.
So let's go through the names here, because all 16 of these ladies had really good MMA careers. There's a few that maybe fizzled out shortly after the season, but there's still fighters going on today. Esparza Hill was the first matchup in the bracket. Beck Rawlings, Tisha Torres, Aisling Daly taking on Angela Magana. Jessica Penne already had the Invicta belt around her waist at 105 pounds. She was already a huge deal. Taking on Lisa Ellis, Felice Herrig taking on Heather Jo Clark, Tisha Torres, Randa Markos. Then you look at it, Alex Chambers, Rose Namajunas, and Emily Kagan taking on Joanne Calderwood to round things out.
That's wild.
These are really, really big names. So if you do look at it, I mean, season 20 had a huge impact, not just ushering in a new division, but again, up at the top, Gilbert Melendez, Anthony Pettis, that was for the Wheaties box. It was a great season. We compare this to season 14, Team Bisping taking on Mayhem Miller, Dream's Own. And if you look at it for the names, Matt, it's not even so much for the names as it was for some of the all-time wars that we had. Diego Berendao, Diego really owned that season.
Diego Berendao was a big deal at one point. Now, yes, if you're just getting into MMA, you might remember Diego Berendao as being the guy who got knocked out by, like, Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor and a lot of other memorable fighters, if we're being honest. But he was, like, one of the first kind of Uriah Hall products, if you will, where you were like, oh, after he wins the Ultimate Fighter, like, is he just going to fight for the belt? Because Diego Berendao was running over everybody. And his last fight against Dennis Bermudez is one of the all-time great Ultimate Fighter fights. I know people always bring up, oh, Forrest Griffin versus Stephen Bonner. Yes, that fight was great, but it's just a one-round slobber knocker. I highly recommend going back and watching Dennis Bermudez versus Diego Berendao. It had everything that you really want out of an Ultimate Fighter winning fight, because you saw the champ of the season, I should say, Diego Berendao get dropped, face adversity, come back, and beat Dennis Bermudez, who went on to have a pretty good UFC career. It's not like he beat Dennis Bermudez and Bermudez lost two fights by split decision and then everybody forgot about him. Like, he went on to become a top five ranked featherweight. So the fact that there were so many, not just memorable names, but memorable fights in this season. And here's the other thing. Jason Mayhem Miller was making his return to the UFC. People forget, he fought George St. Pierre all the way back when at, I forget what UFC event it was. I'm not even going to embarrass myself trying to remember. But he fought him all the way back when, at welterweight, left. Had one of those great, like, Nick Diaz careers where it's like, he's really good, he's just not here yet. Then he finally makes his return after Bully Beatdown fame. You might remember that show. And then he fights Michael Bisping, another one of the great characters, if you will, of the UFC. It was just a great, listen, we like to applaud the UFC's matchmaking sometimes. They just did a good job getting two entertaining fighters in a room together. Because Michael Bisping, listen, he's entertaining. Whether you liked him for spitting on Jorge Rivera or whether you hated him for that, like, he was an entertaining fighter. And when you had him and Jason Miller together, it just made made for good hijinks, if you will, throughout the season. So it was a memorable season, the Ultimate
You
Fighter.
Look at the bracket. Steven Seiler, PFL fame. Brandao, you look at it. First round knockout. First round submission. He buzzsawed through that season. You also have Brian Caraway, Marcus Brimage, Dennis Bermudez beating Jimmy Rivera at the start. Jimmy's still a ranked fighter these days, down in weight class. Steven Bass, Dustin Nice, and Akira Korasani, a guy who I thought would stick around forever, but didn't. But a great season there. So you got season 20, season 14. Matt, let's flip it on over to our second round. We have season 20 winning. We have season 1, season 24, season 10. I mean, so much to digest there, but we have a final four. I mean, it's tricky, but you've got season 10 take on season 24. And like I said, season 1, season 20. Let's go 1 against 20. It's a tricky one there.
It really is because, okay, you look at season 1 and it's just a bunch of nostalgia. Let's be honest. Because you think, my favorite fighter for the longest time before we ever, like, cared about MMA enough to do this kind of stuff was Forrest Griffin. There you go. Early favorite. I was a big Forrest Griffin guy because I remember that first fight against Stephen Bonner and watching it on YouTube at this place called the Willie O'Ree. It's this rink in Fredericton while Craig would play hockey. I remember watching that fight on the Wi-Fi of my iPod Touch, okay? I've liked MMA for a while, all right? And I just, like, when a fight is that memorable, and when you do have kind of those lasting memories, and when that season was a large part, not even just as to why you got into MMA, but the reason why most of your friends who like MMA got into MMA, it's just really hard to put anything else over the top of season 1. But when you look at season 20, like, they're kind of the same size of different coins. You look at Carlos Spires and Rose Namajunas. It was memorable, but for very different reasons. Season 1, it is that nostalgia because it was all these legends. Season 20, I can still turn on my TV any Saturday and see a lot of those same fighters. So it's nothing against season 20. And honestly, I have this weird kind of bias towards season 20 because I can still watch a lot of those fighters. But it is really hard to pick it over season 1. At least I believe so.
Yeah, it really is tricky. I mean, season 1 for a lot of people means a lot of different things. So season 1 kind of gets a little bit of a bye. You consider season 24, season 10. I mean, season 10 was one of the best ones out there. And you talk about it, heavyweight, they still play those ads today. One guy has a comedy career off of it. One guy had a weird Bellator career off of it. But Roy Nelson had a lot of success in the UFC. Brendan Schaub might surprise some people, and you got to go to the back of your brain. He beat Mirko Krokop. He actually finished him. So how wild is that? Season 24, one of the more recent seasons, but the Ultimate Fighter Tournament of Champions. I mean, hey, the two coaches, yeah, Joe B, kind of 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Henry Cejudo might be retired, but wow, there's still so many fighters from that season. And again, it was only back in 2016. But still ranked and ranked very highly in the flyweight division.
Also, the fact that they gave a regional champion the chance to fight the greatest fighter of all time up until that point. Because, listen, in 2021, we think about DJ a little bit differently. It's been a few years. He's been traded to one. He had some oddly close fights to start his career.
And then Adriano just said, no.
And Adriano said, hey, I'm pretty good at this whole MMA thing. And here's the one thing. Adriano deserves more credit. He dropped Demetrius, then he kneed him in the head. People gotta remember that. It's not just like he took him down, then kneed him in the head. Like, he had him hurt before. But this isn't an Adriano Moraes spiel that I'm about to go on. Very different seasons for the reasons that you mentioned. Season 10, a lot of the memorable fighters, just because it was the Brendan Schaubs, the Roy Nelsons, the Kimbo Slices, like, just fighters who are very synonymous with MMA and heavyweight MMA, if you will. But when you look at, I guess, who the better fighters were, it is really hard to pick against when you look at the Tournament of Champions with Joey B and Henry Cejudo. The one thing I will say is, again, the Cejudo-Joseph Benavidez dynamic does kind of hold that season back in my eyes. Because listen, I know I applaud it, Mayhem Miller and Michael Bisping for making, you know, entertaining content between those two. Those guys had no entertaining banter between the two. Henry Cejudo and Joseph Benavidez, I don't know if they diminish pay-per-view buys when they're on a pay-per-view, but they don't do a great job of selling it.
That's the part that we didn't talk about with season 10. You had Rampage and Rashad Evans, and wow, two guys that really bring it. Rashad Evans was really starting to reach his peak powers in 2009. Rampage was already a huge superstar, busting down doors, just absolutely wrecking house, making Karen Bryant feel weird in interviews. So at that point, I mean, season 10, it's really tough to not go with 10 over 24, which brings us, Matt, to season 10, versus season one. And as we said, I mean, you go through these different seasons. Season nine, you had Henderson Bisping. I mean, hey, UFC 100, wow. You had before that Frank Mir, Big Nog. There were so many really big seasons of The Ultimate Fighter. But when you look at it, season one, Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture. Season 10, Rampage, and the man himself, Rashad Evans. It's tricky. And they're great seasons. Like, I'd really like to know the thoughts of the people viewing. I mean, let us know down below in the comments section. Have we gone crazy this far in the semis?
I'm going to make a joke at our own expense. If we wore nothing but Affliction t-shirts, these are the two seasons we would have picked to be facing off against each other. Kimbo Slice versus, remember when Stephen Bonner fought Forrest Griffin? Yeah, I do. I was in dualies then. Like, that's such a, like, rural Canadian thing to say. Season 10 and 1, though, they are the most memorable for all the reasons you brought up. Like, they still show Rampage tearing down that door from the season in promo packages.
And I saw it today on Instagram.
There you go. And people still talk about Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner. And again, I really can't put enough importance behind the statement of just how much that fight meant to MMA in its infancy. Because MMA, up until that point, it was a lot of like, hey, we're going to have this jiu-jitsu guy fighting this wrestler. We're going to see what happens. And then it was in the dark ages that you did have, like, Ken Shamrock, who could do a little bit more than just one thing, but nobody cared. And then you finally had The Ultimate Fighter, which opened it up, and not only did a great job just, like, humanizing athletes, I guess, is like a bigger picture thing and looking at player empowerment nowadays, but it just did a great job of letting people know MMA fighters aren't all, like, tattoo neck wearing people who just drink a bunch of Bud Light and they're, like, bad dudes. Like, they're just regular humans who have this crazy job. And it really did kind of open up that window to really let you see that MMA fighters, listen, they're no different than basketball players, than hockey players. They're just athletes like everybody else. And then season 10, they did the same thing, but with so many characters. Again, I'm glad that we did finally settle on these two seasons, but I think there's only one that could be the final winner.
And I mean, we're going with it. We're going with season one, Matt. If you look at it just for the finals, Liddell Couture as the heads, and then you have Sanchez, Griffin, Bonner, Hall of Famers. Like, there's arguably, what, there's five Hall of Famers, and you could really point to other guys as really being building blocks for this division. Do people love to hate on Josh Koscheck? Sure. But was he in some pretty big fights? You're darn tootin' he was. Kenny Florian, same thing.
He commentates BattleBots.
Yeah, and with the PFL, or he did in the past. But you look at it, I mean, huge names throughout that season. Throw in Chris Lieben, throw in Nate Quarry. Throw in Diego Sanchez, Mike Swick, who's really doing the damn thing on his own channel. So go check out his show. But so many really big... Jason Thacker was on the season. So many big names there. But season one, I mean, again, I just go back to sitting, you know, by myself in my room, 10 p.m. I get the PS3 on. I get the old-style TV, and I'm just hanging around on UFC Undisputed, just clicking and watching that fight over and over and over again. I know it was a huge stepping stone, a huge point for me, and we've talked about this in the past. You know, you really kind of try and go behind the curtain. For us, it was 2008-2009. Lyoto Machida, Shogun Hua. I remember John Jones. It was the rise. Now, listen, was it around the time when he was taking on the janitor, Matt Yashchenko? Yeah, maybe it was, but you look at all these things. It was a huge point for us. And I mean, even with that season, 2005, you're going back. But to really get into the sport, that's a season that, although it's kind of corny and although a lot of people are probably going to pick that as the winner, I mean, man, it meant so much to so many different people.
No, I couldn't agree more. Again, season one still gets talked about nowadays as like really the launching pad of the UFC, kind of modern day MMA, if you will. So if a season is that important, and if a season basically took the UFC from being $30 million in debt to then later on being valued at over $4 billion, then I think it did something right. So season one of The Ultimate Fighter almost kind of had to be our winner.
So you definitely got to let us know down below in the comments section. Did we miss a season? What was the season that you look forward to the most? Is our bracket absolutely insane? You let us know down below. But Matt, it's always a lot of fun to kind of go back, talk about something that we don't normally get the opportunity to talk about, break the fourth wall a little bit, get out of the mold of the predictions and the picks, and talk about The Ultimate Fighter. Big season coming up shortly. Volkanovski, Ortega, some cast and characters that you recognize. Is Craig Jones involved? Yeah, it's going to be an interesting season. I'm looking forward to it now a little bit more so than I was before. And to really break the fourth wall, I'm not a huge Ultimate Fighter guy, so for me to go back and really kind of research these seasons, go back and watch some of the back and forth, the fights, it's actually gotten me more excited for the upcoming season.
Craig Jones, guest on Alex Jones' show last week. But no, here's the thing. at least the coaches are really, really good. And that's the thing I always get excited for. Like, the fact that the Ultimate Fighter even got started, or the reason it got started to begin with, was they wanted to build up their main events a little bit more. You want to have that 24-7 coverage. And listen, Volkanovski versus Ortega, as a skill set, that fight is so much fun. But those personalities don't really clash all that much. So I do think this show is going to give those guys both an opportunity to really sell this upcoming featherweight fight between those two. And Volkanovski versus Brian Ortega, I don't know anybody in the MMA world who isn't extremely excited for that fight. So I do think that season, 28 is going to be a great launching pad for that fight.
29th season. Can't wait for it, Matt. We've got a great show to continue on. And hey, we threw it out there to the Q&A. We threw it out there, YouTube community tab, over on Instagram, at Fight Night Picks, as well as on Twitter. We get some great questions. So let's give some answers. This week in MMA, Matt, the Q&A, we threw it on over to you, the fans, over on Twitter, Instagram, at Fight Night Picks, but also in the YouTube community tab. We get a lot of great questions. We're going to try and give some answers. And the first one is from Phoenix over in that YouTube community tab. Question is, who are your top three prospects outside of the UFC that you would like to see stepping into the octagon by the end of 2022? Let's get into it. Now, Matt, I threw together about half a page of names. I've got a lot of different names. I've answered this one on what? Instagram? We did...
We answer this question or a form of this question, I feel like, every time we do a Q&A.
So we did this, what? Probably 3 or 4 months ago. I've done it on Early Stoppage. I've done it on Instagram. We'll do it here with a little bit of a twist. We only got three names. I've got a whole page of them. Matt, I mean, one that we've seen really recently, and I'm not going to say he's going to be in the UFC in 2022. This is just the first one that came to mind, was Bryce Meredith. He won his first fight with LFA just a week ago. Former All-American, big Wyoming guy. I think he's a name that you're going to have to watch out for. But the name that you and I both kind of landed on, Notorious Nathias Frederick over with Cage Warriors. I mean, it's not like he's getting any younger. He is 38. He does only have a few, fights. He's thrown a dozen of them together in his pro career. This is a guy that people definitely have to watch out for if they aren't already.
This is a very exciting fighter coming out of Cage Warriors, and not just due to the X's and O's and how good of a fighter he is, but this is a fighter who does a lot of great work and who is a massive advocate for really anybody with disabilities trying to fight. He's a guy who, he's an autistic fighter who has dyslexia and just a lot of severe problems that he's been able to work through really using martial arts. He's been able to use that as a way to not only inspire, but like, the guy's really good too. And I know at 38, he might kind of cross the threshold for what you could say a prospect in MMA, but Nathias Frederick is a guy who, listen, even at 38, I still feel like he deserves his chance. Like, he at least deserves the opportunity to showcase his skills on the biggest platform. I don't feel like that's too much to ask. There was a very similar kind of narrative when Nick Newell had fought on Tuesday Night Contender Series. They could do something kind of similar with Nathias Frederick. Just give the guy the opportunity, because I do feel like if you gave him the opportunity and really gave him the chance to kind of let the North American audience see who he is. He's on a 9-fight winning streak. Again, he's got an amazing story and he's got the skills to go along with it. At 38 years old, like I said, maybe he does cross that threshold of he's not young enough to be a prospect for me, but he is a fighter outside the UFC who I want to see inside the UFC. So maybe that goes a little bit around the way that you answer or ask that question, but I do feel like Nathias Frederick's a guy who at least deserves the opportunity at some point during his career.
And he's got a fight in June coming up against former San Antonio Spur Matt Bonner. Matthew Bonner, who just picked up a huge win in his own right. So Nathias Frederick, if you haven't watched some of his highlights, holy smokes, this guy is a great fighter. The next name is a guy that's got a fight coming up this week. He's only 20, 4-0 on some sites, 5-0 on other sites. But if you look at his amateur career, 23 amateur fights, 23 wins. I'm talking, of course, of Muhammad Makhachev. And listen, he's got a big fight coming up with Brave. A little bit of sketchiness around the details of where that fight's taking place. But Brave CF 51 coming up shortly. And he's taking on Ibrahim Navruzov. But this guy, absolute ball of energy. He's really the poster child of the IMMAF circuit.
And it's really refreshing too. I know people, listen, there's a lot of different opinions on amateur careers in MMA. But there's a lot of MMA fighters who, How many times do we say this in Bellator? You see a fighter, they're a good prospect, and you're like, damn, if they only had one or two more fights. Like, if Valerie Laredo, for instance, had like five or six amateur fights, then maybe you could work out some of those kinks that she's starting to encounter now. The fact that Muhammad has 21 amateur wins already.
23,
I'm underselling him, for goodness sakes. It's just really impressive. And you know that by the time he is facing those guys who are more experienced maybe in professional MMA wins, you know he is going to be much more experienced than just his record would show.
Yeah, he is a super, super talented fighter. And again, making the change and going from like a Brave to a UFC, we've seen it before, so it wouldn't be all that crazy out of the realm of possibility. And that's where this really comes into play, because I didn't want to give you names at a Bellator One Championship, KSW to an extent, because yeah, they're major organizations in their own right. They're not really feeder leagues. You're not really going to see a lot of crossover. So to go with Makhachev, to go with Matthias Frederick, you might see names like that pop up. And then I'm going to kind of launch some really long tosses at you. And again, another Brave name and a guy that's finished a lot of fights is, and it's a tricky one, Abdisalam Ulu Kubanchiev. And his nickname is Omok. This guy's 18-3. He's only 26 years old, coming out of Kyrgyzstan. It's a little difficult now at this point. But if you look at him, I mean, yeah, Valentina Shevchenko, Antonina Shevchenko, really doing a great job of representing the region. But holy smokes, I had it written down. You look at it right now, he's got a fight coming up, he did have a fight not that long ago against Rolando D, UFC vet, maybe didn't have the greatest run. But if you look at his overall body of work, 10 fight win streak, holy smokes, 15 of his 18 wins by finish, 11 knockouts, and again, you just finished Rolando D. That's a name to watch.
Exactly. When you go out there and beat experienced fighters, like, that means something. How many times do we come on here and there's a UFC newcomer and we look at their record and it's like, listen, there's things to take from their record, but let's be honest, it's pretty underwhelming. When you do have wins like Rolando D on your record and just other experienced fighters, that means a lot for when you finally do make it to the big show. So no, I agree with this pick 100%.
Kyrgyzstan. There we go. We got it on the 4th, 5th, whatever try it was. And then my last name, and this was the longest of long shots, but bear with me. Out of Kazakhstan, Imran Taisultanov. And listen, the guy does look a little bit like Andrew Santino, but don't let his devilish good looks and his red hair fool you. This guy can certainly finish a fight. Now, I know his second to last fight, he did win by a illegal soccer kick. It happens. But in his last fight in 2021, he took on Konstantin Litnik, and holy smokes, this guy finished this fight in just the early seconds. You can really tell that his striking is polished. He does have a good clinch game. He's coming out of the gym that you might have heard of before, Arlan MMA Pro Team, Zhalgash Zhumagulov out of that gym as well. And Kazakh MMA, we've really seen it kind of come to the forefront recently. I know you and I have talked about it, Demir Zmagulov picking up. Listen, it wasn't his biggest win that he had recently, but still a big win. And you have other fighters like Maria Agapova, like Shavkat Rakhmonov. If Imran Taisultanov is another one of those guys that if he can kind of get a big fight, you never know what could happen in the future.
Craig went so underground with this pick, I don't even know who Imran is. So again, really good pick by you.
All right, Matt. Phoenix Graves asking us the toughest of questions.
Good question.
We really do appreciate it there, Matt. Another one of the questions from Bailey Ripplinger. Have you guys seen any of these Panini Prism UFC cards?
I saw that weird unboxing that Dana White did on like Instagram Live where he just didn't care what was going on the other end. But he was like, I'm cutting apart the box now. We're going to look at the first packs. And Dana White was like, ah, you open it yet? So that's really all I know about them. But I am excited that the UFC is kind of branching out into that world.
Well, the weird thing is, there's been Topps cards before. Like, the UFC's done this. I have to throw this out there. If you're an MMA fan, being a fan is not cheap. To get all of these pay-per-views, to get all of these different shows and subscriptions, a box of these, and I threw it out there actually to our local card store, the Card Rack, Schultz in Fredericton. Yeah, no, didn't really get them because they're $1,500. So I did throw it out there in a message. They are about $1,500 for a hobby box or for a case. I couldn't really tell. It looks like a hobby box is that much. I bought a blaster box, and even those are like $90 US. So that's going to show up here in the next few weeks. We'll get more into it because closeted, you know, card guys from our...
Oh, nothing wrong with some memorabilia over here.
Can't wait for those. So I'm looking forward to it. We'll do a bit of a content piece out of that. A couple other questions, Matt, that were thrown out there in the YouTube community tab. One by Voodoo, which belt do you think will change hands the most over the next 3 years? We kind of chewed on this before the show. My answer was bantamweight, and it's not a slight on Aljamain Sterling. It just goes to show that the talent in this division is very, very rich. Sandhagen, Dillashaw, Jan, so on and so forth. A lot of great fighters there at bantamweight.
I can't disagree with bantamweight. Bantamweight would be my second division. I just think lightweight, now without Khabib, there's just so many great fighters who haven't really had the opportunity to be Chip because there was that big tall tree that really took over all the sunlight. Now you have guys like Oliveira who finally has the belt. Justin Gaethje, where are you at, Justin? Michael Chandler, Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor. Like, these aren't just big names and great fighters. These are just like big names kind of in the sports world outside of MMA. So not only because there's the glamour division, I just feel like that belt is going to shift hands a lot. I feel like Charles Oliveira could lose that fight to Dustin Poirier or Conor McGregor and then immediately beat whoever just beat him right afterwards. So I feel like either bantamweight or lightweight, just because they are the two most talent-stacked divisions, I feel like they have the best chances of just having that revolving door kind of champ.
Akash Deep, who's always in the chat on our live shows, is asking, thoughts on how Bellator won championship, PFL, and other such leagues as KSW could give the UFC a run for their money in, say, the next 5 years? And I think we've kind of answered this one or tiptoed around it in the past. And I love the question. While I don't think that you're going to have anybody dwarf the UFC now that, you know, Endeavor's gone public and the UFC has really been a huge moneymaker. You've got the ABC deal. You're on ESPN Plus and ESPN, and you're getting that max coverage. Those other leagues just won't. But here's what I will say. And I know that the man himself has been pretty vocal about it on Twitter. So shouts to you, Campbell McLaren, because I'm sure he's probably going to listen to this.
There you go.
Combate's ratings are big. They are very big. It's just tricky to say that all of these different leagues are going to get on that level. Now, again, Combate's got a big show coming up here shortly, and they do put on really, really big shows. It's just that a lot of the North American audience, and listen, the Canadian audience, we're not really getting that exposure to Combate. But with some of these other leagues, the one untapped market, and it's going to sound silly, the one untapped market where UFC's there, PFL's there, Bellator's there to a certain extent, the TikTokers. And listen, I know that TikTok and MMA, maybe they don't jive. Maybe you watching us, you're probably thinking TikTok, that's silly. Yeah, we don't invest in it a whole lot. But maybe if somebody went out on a limb and went hot and heavy with the TikTok, maybe that's where it's at.
This is my only issue with TikTok, and I do kind of agree with you, and I do think it is going to take someone to kind of look outside the box. Because, let's be honest, TikTok and MMA, like you would say, they don't really go hand in hand, so it will take sort of one of those unique approaches to really grow one of those other brands. My only issue with an approach like that is the people who are on that platform, very similarly to how, like, when Paige VanZant bare knuckle tries to use hers to sell pay-per-views, people who are Paige VanZant fans aren't also fans of bare knuckle boxing. My point is that a lot of people on TikTok probably are not also MMA fans. I won't say that, yes, one of these organizations can use that platform to help grow themselves. It's just a lot of people who are on that platform to begin with probably aren't looking up, like, great knockouts and 6-second clips. So that will be my slight pushback. But I do agree, it is going to take a Herculean effort for another one of these organizations to make a dent in what the UFC does. Because this is what the UFC has managed to do. People don't care about who UFC fighters are anymore. It's just UFC, the company. They figured out a way to really brand the team and not the athletes. Whereas Bellator, they rely on guys like Michael Chandler. They rely on signing guys like Ryan Bader, for instance, who are kind of names who then in turn boost the company. So my issue really is that none of these other companies have reached the level to where they can just market themselves and not their fighters. And UFC, luckily, and yes, the fact that they're basically funded by the biggest entertainment company in the world probably helps them. But the fact that they do have just that name and notoriety, and they are so kind of just ingrained in the culture at this point, it's going to be tough. Bellator, I would say, is the biggest foothold in North America, but even Bellator, like, every other 6 months, it feels like Bellator has a new home of where you can watch it or where you can see it. It doesn't feel like a lot of these other organizations are growing in North America to the level that the UFC is. So I guess for me, I'm just curious to see which of these organizations can really fill the void that's being left by the lack of a secondary competition.
I mean, listen, the NBA is flourishing on TNT. NHL is soon going to be on TNT. They just hired the great one to be an analyst there. And now with one, who knows? You never know. One championship on TNT. I certainly enjoyed it, but we don't have TNT in Canada, so I watch it all on YouTube because it's free in Canada that way. Now, Matt, our last question from Orbo. And this is our last one on YouTube saying, and this was just thrown out there, have you seen the Nemkov affair? He says he wants to move the UFC after the Bellator Grand Prix. Take his past losses into consideration. How do you see him doing in the light heavyweight division if he really gets there? And I mean, let's talk about some wins and some losses. He fought Felipe Lins in the past. Who else did he fight? Jiří Procházka? Vadim Nemkov is one of those guys that, I mean, listen, you look at his last win over Phil Davis. Was it an impressive performance?
He looked pretty good.
Does his cardio need to get a little bit better? Maybe. But Vadim Nemkov is one of those guys that I really do think would slot well into the UFC's light heavyweight division.
It's tough to say, honestly, because this is my problem with Nemkov. Like, the level of competition I'm watching him fight in Bellator right now is nowhere near what ranked light heavyweights are in the UFC. This is my problem. There was a narrative for a while, and listen, this is probably one of our bigger fight night picks arguments we ever got into. You were a big Ryan Bader guy, and you, at one point, did say these words, and I'll never forget them. Ryan Bader's kind of a bad matchup for Stipe Miocic if they ever fought at heavyweight. I think in hindsight that's a little ridiculous, but my point is that his wins over Phil Davis and Ryan Bader and Liam McGarry, they're nice, but I don't even know where those three fighters would slot in with ranked light heavyweights in the UFC. Because the UFC light heavyweight division is in this weird limbo right now. You have an older champion, you have an older number one contender, you have these younger fighters, but it does feel like the older lions, if you will, just keep on killing off the young contenders. So I'm sure Nemkov would be a top 15 talent, don't get me wrong. It's just there's a big difference between being like 12 to 15 and 1 to 5 in that division. So I just don't really know where he'd slot in.
I mean, Vadim Nemkov, Anthony Smith, maybe that'd be a good litmus test right off the bat. I wouldn't give him to like a Rakic early on, but there's a lot of really good fights to make in the UFC's light heavyweight division. If you focus on the losses, well, back to back, I mean, Jiří Prochazka, you get finished, and listen, those are long rounds to start. And then Carl Albrechtsen, I know Carl, he won his last fight, and when he came into Bellator, he didn't look all that hot in his first fight, but Carl Albrechtsen is a really good fighter, so I don't hold that that loss in the highest of regards or esteems. Now, Matt, if we throw it on over, and this is a question that I actually mismatched together. I'm not going to throw names out there, but I did get two questions emailed to me. And you can throw me an email. You can find my address. It's out there. But two different questions thrown together. And the question of regional rankings kind of comes up. What stock do you put in there? I got to give shouts to MMAprospects.com. If you find them, I mean, listen, Sean Bitter's over there. Kristen is over there. Kristen King, who I co-hosted a show with. Listen, Michael Fidel was a part. Like, there's a lot of really big names or names that maybe you haven't heard of that you should hear of. It's a great organization. They have rankings for Ryzen, KSW, LFA. Like, there's big names that they talk about, and they really do a good job of previewing and profiling prospects. I use the site often. So when you're taking regional rankings out there, and then the other question to kind of tie into it is UFC debuts and the regionalization of debuts and kind of, you know, let's say, geez, I'm a Canadian and my first fight is going to be over in Russia. How do I kind of adjust to the time difference? So throwing the regionalization of MMA into things, it really does make it tough. And then when we're trying to profile certain fights, you got to kind of take it into context a little bit, but you can't really put too much stock into it. I know that's not a good answer.
You've asked me 17 questions. Okay. Regional rankings, I don't put it. I'm going to spoil this little secret right now. It's like, you want to know what the secret is? There is no secret. I put no stock in MMA rankings at all. Like, I feel like eye test in MMA means everything. And I know we sort of get in disputes as to how much stock do you want to put into stats. Like, MMA is one of the few sports where you can look at the numbers people do, game in and game out, and it doesn't really tell you the whole story about it. So just when you look at rankings, I would always say take them with a grain of salt. I understand a lot of the rankings, it's just like, okay, this person fought this person, and they landed wherever they were in the rankings. So, of course, the person who won is now going to be higher. I understand all that math and whatnot, but it's really hard to say, like, okay, this fighter is better than like 17 guys behind him, but those three in front are probably a bad matchup. It's just so hard to put rankings. Like, we make fun of the rankings in the UFC and in Bellator, and those are the most readily available fighters that we know the most about, have the most media availability for, and have the most insight as to what their camp is, and we still don't have a good idea as to how to rank those fighters. So it is really difficult to rank fighters who don't even have five pro fights in a lot of cases. For me, I really do think it comes down to eye test and MMA. When you look at MMA, you really just have to say, okay, what is fighter A really good at, and what is fighter B really good at? And I know people want to throw rankings to it, because you can look at any other sport in the world and you can say, well, hey, I know like points per game in basketball and wins and losses are easy to follow. And yes, if you really want to go stat heavy, you could with MMA. But for me, I don't put a lot of stock into ratings or into rankings, sorry, or stats. I really do feel like you have to go out there and just watch the fighters fight. And that's how you get the best judgment as to how good they're going to be.
And it is tough too, because, you know, if you want to pick on, let's pick on an area of the world. And this was the one that was brought up in the email, like on Alaska FC, you look at certain fighters that are there and you look at some of those those topology rankings is exactly kind of what we're tiptoeing about, but it really is tricky. So you have to go out, you have to watch the fights, you have to consider the skill level that A, the fighter that you're looking at is at, but compare that to the fighters they're fighting. And sometimes, you know, we're talking apples and oranges. So it really is subjective, but you have to look at it that way. And then to answer the fighter and fight location thing, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt too. I mean, it doesn't affect certain fighters, you know, the same way than it does others. You consider it like, again, a fighter from North America going to Australia and vice versa. Like, it does get really tricky. So I don't look too much into it. Maybe with the debuts you do, but it really is just a can of worms that is too difficult to open up.
And experience really does matter. Like, if this little rant of ours really proves anything, is that experience matters, and the people who you fought really do tell the tale of your career. I know that's surprising, but, like, there's a lot of fighters out there who, they might have a lot of hype, and you hear a lot of things that this fighter is able to do, but then you watch the fight, and you're like, they don't do any of that stuff. That matters. Like, don't just believe the hype and what other people tell you this fighter's able to do. Because organizations out there are going to try to hype their own athletes too. So I highly do recommend, like, go out there, watch a fighter's losses. That's always the best way to tell, like, how good they are and what they need to improve on. But also, look at their best wins over the highest levels of competition. Like, getting a 1 minute win over a guy who was, like, 1-2 doesn't mean a lot at the end of the day. Like, yes, it's really nice that you were able to get a quick win over a guy that you were supposed to beat quickly, but, like, does that really help you grow as a martial artist? Not that much. So I do recommend, if you're ever trying to look for kind of future up-and-coming talent, go out, look at their losses, because it really does tell you the story about their career, and go out and try to look at their losses where they were, or their wins where they were tested the most.
And to really quote Matt almost, and to quote one of his favorite bands, just don't believe the hype. 21 Pilots. Matt,
21 Pilots.
Hopefully we were able to answer some of your questions. We're going to be doing more MMA Q&As in the future. Absolutely love answering them. And yes, there's a few boxes of cards on the way. We'll break them or whatever the kids do these days. Matt, lots of fun. So Matt, that pretty much wraps us up. Another episode of This Week in MMA. Let us know what you liked, what you didn't like. We're making this show for you, of course. And if you haven't subscribed or tossed a like, we would certainly appreciate it. We got a lot of great stuff coming up in the coming weeks. We got a really big card coming up next week with UFC Fight Night, Rozenstruik versus Sakai. I know there's a lot of fighters on that card that I'm looking forward to seeing. The return of Santiago Ponzinibbio taking on Miguel Baeza. A couple of knockout artists. Tom Breeze, Antonio Ahoyo. Disco, he's got a new opponent in Gregory Rodriguez. I mean, lots to love.
You're forgetting Marcin Tybura in the co-main event against Wal Harris. There has never been a, this fight's going to end in 1 minute, or it's going to be an absolute slobber knocker of a 15-minute boar fest. But hey, it should be an entertaining fight. And this is one of those weird cards. So yes, you might roll your eyes when we say, like, really big fight card coming up, but there's a lot of interesting matchups top to bottom. So whether it is the main card or the prelims, there are some fun fights on here.
Manoel Fiorot, a prospect to watch, and one more, and I gotta throw it out there. Mason Jones didn't lose any stock for me when he fought Mike Davis, but he's gonna be taking on Alain Patrick. So all kinds of great stuff. Yusuf Zalal, Sean Woodson. We got a great interview with Yusuf Zalal on the channel, thanks to JHK MMA. So make sure you check that out. Matt, really looking forward to next week. Loving This Week in MMA. And as we always say,
let's get into it.